Fred Colon peered through the bars. He was, on the whole, a pretty good jailer. He always had a pot of tea on the go. He was, as a general rule, amiably disposed to most people. He was too slow to be easily fooled, and he kept the cell keys in a tin box in the bottom drawer of his desk, a long way out of reach of any stick, hand, dog, cunningly thrown belt, or trained Cratchian monkey spider, making Fred Colon possibly unique in the annals of jail history. He was a bit worried about this dwarf. You get all sorts in jails, and they often yelled a bit, but with this one he didn't know what was worse, the sobbing or the silence. He'd put a candlestick on a stool by the bars, too, because the dwarf had carried on alarmingly if there wasn't enough light. He stirred the tea reflectively and handed a mug to Nobby. "We've got a rum un here, I reckon," he said. "A dwarf that's scared of the dark, not right in the head, then, wouldn't touch his tea and biscuit. What do you think?"
"I think I'll have these biscuit," said Nobby, reaching over to the plate.
"Where are you down here, anyway?" said Fred. "I'm surprised you ain't out there a ogling of young women."
"Tawny's going out boozing with the girls tonight," said Nobby.
"Ah, you want to warn her about that kind of thing," said Fred Colon. "You know what it's like in the centre when the pubs and clubs empty. There's throwing up and yelling and unladylike behaviour and taking their vests off, and I don't know what. It's called," he scratched his head, "minge drinking."
"She's only gone out with Angua and Sally and Cheery, Sarge," said Nobby, taking another biscuit.
"Oh, you want to watch that, Nobby? Women ganging up on men?" Fred paused. "A vampire and a werewolf out on a razzle? Take May Tiplad and stay indoors tonight. And if they start behaving in—"
He stopped as the sound of Sam Vimes's voice came down the spiral stone steps, followed closely by its owner.
"So I've got to stop them forming a block, right? If you're playing the troll side, yes," said the new voice. "A tight group of dwarfs is bad news for trolls."
"Trolls shove, dwarfs throw."
"Right.
And the central rock, no one can jump that, right?" said Vimes.
"Yes.
I still think the dwarfs have it all their own way."
"We shall see. The important thing—"
Vimes stopped when he saw Nobby and Colon.
"Okay, lads, I'll talk to the prisoner now," he said. "How is he?"
Fred indicated the hunched figure on the narrow bunk in the corner cell.
"Captain Carrot tried talking to him for nearly half an hour, and you know he's got away with people," he said. "Didn't get as much of a sentence out of him. I read him his rates, but don't ask me if he understood them. He didn't want his tea and biscuit at any rate. That's rates 5 and 5B, he added, looking bashfulsome up and down. "He gets rate 5C only if we've got tea-time assortment."
"Can he walk?" said Vimes.
"He sort of shuffles, sir."
"Fetch him out, then," said Vimes.
And seeing Fred's inquiring look at Bashfulson, he went on,
"This gentleman is here to make sure we don't use the rubber truncheon, Sergeant."
"Didn't know we had one, Mr. Vimes," said Fred.
"We haven't," said Vimes. "No point in hitting him with something that bounces, eh?" he added, looking at Bashfulson, who smiled once again his strange little smile.
One candle burned on the table. For some reason, Fred had seen fit to put another on a stool near the one occupied cell.
"Isn't it a bit dark in here, Fred?" said Vimes, as he pushed aside the debris of mugs and old newspapers that covered most of the table.
"Yes, sir. The dwarfs came and nicked some of our candles to put around their... that nasty sign," said Fred, with a nervous look at Bashelson. "Sorry, sir."
"I don't know why we can't just burn it," grumbled Vimes, setting out the thud board.
"That would be dangerous, now that the summoning dark is in the world," said Bashelson.
"You believe in that stuff?" said Vimes.
"Believe? No," said the Grag. "I just know it exists. The troll pieces go all round the central stone, sir," he added helpfully.
Populating the board with its little warriors took some time, but so did the arrival of Helmclever. With Fred Colon steering him carefully by a shoulder, he walked like someone in a dream, his eyes turned up so that they mostly showed the whites. His iron boots scraped on the flagstones. Fred pushed him gently into a chair and put the second candle beside him. Like magic, the dwarf's eyes focused on the little stone armies to the exclusion of everything else in the jail.
"We're playing a game, Mr. Helmclever," said Vimes quietly, "and you can choose your side."
Helmclever reached out with a trembling hand and touched a piece. A troll. A dwarf had chosen to play as the trolls. Vimes gave the hovering Bashfulson a questioning glance and got another smile in return. "Okay. You've got as many of the little sods as possible in a defensive huddle, right?" Vimes's hand hesitated and shifted the dwarf across the board. The click as he placed it was echoed by the one made by the movement of Helmclever's next troll. The dwarf looked sleepy, but his hand had moved with snake speed. "Who killed the 4 mining dwarfs, Helmklever?" said Vimes softly. "Who killed the boys from the city?" Dull eyes looked at him, and then meaningfully at the board. Vimes moved a dwarf at random. "The dark soldiers," Helmklever whispered, as a little troll clicked smartly into place. "Who ordered it?" Again the look, again a dwarf placed at random, followed by a troll that was moved so fast the 2 pieces seemed to hit the board together.
"Greg Hamcrusher ordered it."
"Why?"
Click, click.
"They had heard it speaking."
"What was it that spoke? Was it a cube?"
Click, click.
"Yes, it was dug up. It said it spoke with the voice of Barion Bloodaxe."
Vimes heard a gasp from Bashfulson and caught Fred Colon's eye. He jerked his head toward the cell block door and mouthed a couple of words.
"Wasn't he a famous dwarf king?"
said Vimes.
Click, click.
"Yes. He commanded the dwarfs at Coombe Valley," said Helmklever.
"And what did this voice say?"
said Vimes.
Click, click.
And a third click from behind Vimes as Fred Colon locked the door and stood in front of it, looking impassive.
"I do not know. Ardent said it was about the battle. He said it was lies."
"Who killed Greg Amcrasher?"
Click, click.
"I do not know. Ardent called me to the meeting and said there was terrible fighting among the Greggs. Ardent said one of them killed him in the dark with a mining hammer, but no one knew who. They were all struggling together."
All dressed alike, Vimes thought. Just shapes if you can't see their wrists.
"Why did they want to kill him?"
Click, click.
"They had to stop him destroying the words. He was screaming and hitting the cube with the hammer."
"There are sensitive areas on a cube, and it is possible that if they are touched in the wrong order, all the sound will vanish,"
whispered Bashfulson.
"I should think the hammer would do the trick, whatever it hit,"
said Vimes, turning his head.
"No, Commander, devices are immensely tough."
"They must be."
Vimes turned back to Helmklever.
"It's wrong to destroy lies, but it's okay to kill the miners," he said.
Click.
He heard the hiss of Bashfulson's intake of breath.
"Well, yes, perhaps that could have been better put."
There was no answering move. Helmklever hung his head.
"It was wrong to kill the miners," he whispered. "And why not destroy lies? But it is wrong to think these thoughts, so I said nothing. The old Greggs were angry and upset and confused, so Ardent took charge. He said one dwarf killing another underground. Everyone knew that was no business of humans. He said he could make it all right. He said everyone must listen to him. He told the Dark Guards to take the body to the new outer chamber, and he told me to fetch my club."
Vimes glanced at Bashfulson and mouthed the word, "club." He got an emphatic nod in return. Helmklever sat hunched in silence, and then raised one hand slowly and moved a troll.
Click.
Click, click.
Click, click.
Click, click.
Vimes tried to spare a few brain cells for the game while his mind raced and laboured to piece together the random information spilling out of Helmklever.
"So, it all starts when they come here looking for this magic cube which can speak. Why did they come to the city? How did they know the cube was here?"
Click, click.
"When I went to begin my training, I took a copy of the Codex. Ardent confiscated it, but then they called me to a meeting and said it was very important and they would honour me by letting me go with them to the city. Ardent told me it was a great opportunity. Greg Hamcrusher had a mission, he said."
"They didn't even know about the painting?"
"They lived under a mountain. They believe that humans are not real. But Ardent is smart. He said there were always rumours that something had come out of Coombe Valley."
"I bet he is smart," Vimes thought. "So they come here, do a little light pastoral work and rabble-rousing, and search for the cube in a very dwarfish way. They find it. But the poor bastards who are doing the digging hear what it's got to say. Well, everyone knows dwarfs gossip, so the Dark Guards make sure these 4 don't have a chance to."
Click, click.
Click, click.
"Then friend Hamcrusher doesn't like what he hears, either. He wants to destroy the thing. In the struggle in the dark, one of the other Greggs does the world a favour and fetches him a crack on the noggin. But whoops, big mistake, because the mob is going to miss him and is jolly urging to wholesale troll slaughter. You know how dwarfs gossip, and you can't kill them all. So while it's still just us together in the dark, we need a plan. Forward Mr. Ardent, who says, 'I know, we'll take the corpse out to a tunnel that a troll just might have got into and bash its head in with a club. A troll did it. What right-thinking dwarf could possibly believe anything else?'
Click, click."
"Why the candles?"
said Vimes.
"The old Greggs were sitting in brilliant candlelight when I saw them."
Click, click.
"The Greggs ordered it," Helmclever whispered. "They feared what might come for them in darkness."
"And what was it that might come?"
"Click!" Helmclever's hand stopped in mid-air. For several seconds nothing moved in the little circle of yellow light except the candle flames themselves. In the darkness beyond, the shadows craned to hear.
"I cannot say," whispered the dwarf.
"Click! Click, click! Click, click!" Vimes stared at the board. Where'd that troll come from? Helmclever had whipped three dwarfs off the board in one go.
"Ardent says there's always a troll. A troll got into the mine," said Helmclever. "The Greggs said yes, that must have been it."
"But they knew the truth!"
Click, 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 click. Three more dwarfs gone, just like that.
"Truth is what a Gregg says it is," said Helmclever. "The sunlight world is a bad dream anyway. Ardent said no one was to speak about it. He said I was to tell all the guards about the troll."
Blame it on a troll, Vimes thought. For a dwarf, that came naturally. A big troll did it and ran away. This isn't just a can of worms, it's a nest of bloody vipers. He stared at the board. Bloody hell, I'm running into a wall here. What am I left with? Brick saw a dwarf hitting another dwarf, but that wasn't the murder. That was Ardent or someone giving Hamcrusher's dead body that distinctive bashed-by-a-troll look. I'm not actually certain that's a crime. The murder was done in the dark by one of six dwarfs, and the other five might not even know who did it. Okay, maybe I can say that they conspired to conceal a crime.
Hold on.
But it wasn't Ardent who said that the watch should not be told, he said. That was you, wasn't it? Did you want me to be angry, Mr. Helmclever?
He moved to dwarf.
Click.
Helmclever looked down. Since no answer was forthcoming, Vimes captured the wandering troll and placed it beside the board.
"I did not think you would come,"
Helmclever's voice was barely audible.
"Hamcrusher was... I think... I didn't... Ardent said you wouldn't worry because the Greg was such a danger. He said the Greg had ordered the miners to be killed, so now it was ended. But I thought it... It wasn't right. Things were wrong. I heard you were full of pride. I had to get you... interested. He...
You thought I wouldn't be. A troll is accused of murdering a dwarf at a time like this, and I wouldn't be interested.
Ardent said that you wouldn't be because no humans were involved. He said you would not care what happens to dwarfs.
He ought to get out in the fresh air more, said Vimes.
Helmclever's eyes and nose were running now and dripping on the board. A storm stops the battle, Vimes thought. Then the dwarf lifted his head and wailed.
It was the club the troll Mr. Shine gave me for winning five games in a row, he wailed. He was my friend. He said I was as good as a troll, and so I should have a club. I told Ardent it was a war trophy, but he took it and bashed that poor dead body.
Water dripping on a stone, Vimes thought, and it depends on where the drops fall, right, Mr. Shine? What good has it done, this poor devil? He wasn't in the right job to have doubt enter his life.
All right, Mr. Helmclever, thank you for this, he said, sitting back. There is just one thing, though. Do you know who sent those dwarfs to my house?
What dwarfs?
Vimes stared into the weeping red-rimmed eyes. Their owner was either telling the truth, or the stage had missed a major talent.
They came to attack me and my family, he said.
I did hear Ardent talking to the captain of the guard, Helmclever murmured. Something about a warning.
A warning? Do you call...
Vimes began, and stopped when he saw Bashfulson shaking his head.
Right, right.
No point in taking it out on this one. He's had all the stuffing knocked out of him in any case.
They're very frightened now, Helmclever said. They don't understand the city. They don't understand why trolls are allowed here. They don't understand people who don't understand them. They fear you. They fear everything now.
Where have they gone?
I don't know. Ardent said they would have gone now anyway, because they've got the cube and the painting, said Helmclever. He said the painting will show where there are more lies, and those can be destroyed. But they fear most of all the summoning Dark Commander. They can feel it coming for them.
It's only a drawing, said Vimes. I don't believe in it.
I do, said Helmclever calmly.
It is in this room.
How does it come?
It comes in darkness, and in vengeance, and in disguise.
Vimes felt his skin twitch. Nobby looked around the grimy stone walls. Bashfulson sat bolt upright in his chair. Even Fred Colon shifted uneasily.
This is just mystic stuff, Vimes told himself.
It's not even human mystic stuff. I don't believe in it.
So why does it feel a bit chilly in here?" He coughed. "Well, once it knows they're gone, I expect it'll head out after them."
"And it will come for me," said Helmclever, in the same calm voice. He folded his hands in front of him.
"Why? You didn't kill anybody," said Vimes.
"You don't understand. When they killed the miners, one was not all the way dead, and we could hear him hammering on the door with his fists, and I stood in the tunnel and listened to him die, and I wished him dead so that the noise would stop, but when it did, it went on in my head, and I could have turned the wheel, but I was afraid of the dark guards who have no souls, and because of that the darkness will take mine."
The little voice died away. There was a nervous cough from Nobby.
"Well, thank you again," said Vimes.
Good grief. They really messed up his head, poor little sod. "And I've got nothing," he thought. "I might get Ardent on a charge of falsifying evidence. I can't put Brick in the witness box, because I'll simply be proving that there was a troll in the mine. All I've got is young Helmclever here, who's barely fit to testify." He turned to Bashwellson and shrugged.
"I think I'd like to keep our friend here tonight for his own good. I can't imagine there's anywhere else for him to go. The statement he's made is, of course, covered by—"
Now his voice trailed off. He turned back in his chair to glare at the sorrowful Helmclever.
"What painting?"
"The painting of the Battle of Combe Valley by Methodia Rascal," said the dwarf, not looking up.
"It's very big. They stole it from the museum."
"What?" said Fred Colon, who was making tea in the corner. "It was them."
"What? You know about this, Fred?" Vimes demanded.
Yes, Mr. Vimes. We did a report.
Combe Valley, Combe Valley, Combe Valley," roared Vimes, slapping his hand down on the table so hard that the candlesticks jumped in the air.
"A report? What the hell good's a report? Have I got time these days to read reports? Why doesn't someone tell me these things?"
One candle rolled onto the floor and went out. Vimes grabbed for the other one as it reached the edge of the table, but it spun away from his fingers and landed wick first on the flagstones. Darkness fell like an axe. Helmclever groaned. It was a heartfelt, soul-creaking groan, like a death rattle from a living mouth.
"Nobby!" screamed Vimes. "Light a goddamn match right now, and that's a goddamn order!"
There was a frantic scrabbling in the dark, and then a match head was a sudden supernova.
"Well, bring it here, man," he shouted to Nobby. "Get those candles lit."
Helmclever was still staring at the table where the ill-tempered thump had scattered the remains of the game. Vimes glanced down at the game board as the candle flames grew. If you were the kind to see things, you'd say that the trolls and dwarfs had fallen in a rough circle around the central rock, while a few more dwarfs had rolled away in a line. You'd say, in fact, that from above they formed the shape of a round eye with a tail. Helmclever gave a little sigh and slipped sideways onto the floor. Vimes stood up to help him, and then remembered just in time about politics. He forced himself to back away, hands in the air.
"Mr. Bashwellson," he said, "I can't touch him. Please?"
The Grag nodded and knelt down by the dwarf.
"No pulse, no heartbeat," he announced.
"I'm sorry, Commander."
"Then it looks as though I'm now in your hands," said Vimes.
"Indeed, in the hands of a dwarf," said the Grag, standing up.
"Commander Vimes, I will swear that Helmclever was treated with nothing but concern and courtesy whilst I was here, and perhaps with more kindness from you than a dwarf might have a right to expect. His death is not on your hands. The summoning Dark called him. Dwarfs will understand."
"Well, I don't.
Why'd it kill him? What did the poor bugger do?"
"I think it's more true to say that the fear of the summoning Dark killed him," said the Grag. "He left a miner trapped, heard his cries in the dark, and did nothing. To all dwarfs, that is a terrible crime."
"As bad as wiping away a word," said Vimes sourly.
He felt more shaken up than he'd care to admit.
"Some would say it is far worse. His own guilt and fear killed Helmclever. It's as if he had his own summoning dark in his head," said Bashwellson.
"In a way, perhaps. We all have, Commander. Or something similar."
"You know, your religion really messes people up," said Vimes.
"Not in comparison to what they do to one another," said Bashwellson, calmly folding the dead dwarf's hands across his chest.
"And it is not a religion, Commander. Tack wrote the world and the laws, and then he left us. He does not require that we think of him, only that we think."
He stood up.
I shall explain the situation to my fellows, Commander. Incidentally, I would ask you to take me with you to Coombe Valley.
Did I say I was going to Coombe Valley? Said Vimes.
All right, said the Grag calmly. Let's say, then, that should the mood take you to Coombe Valley, will you take me?
I know the place. I know the history. I even know quite a lot about Mindsign, especially the major darknesses. I may be useful.
You demand all that just for telling the truth, said Vimes.
As a matter of fact, no. Jut has factus.
I bargain with no axe in my hand.
I will tell the truth whatever you decide, said Bashfulson. However, since you are not going to Coombe Valley, Commander, I will not press you. It was only an idle thought.
Fun. What is it good for?
It's not pleasure, joy, delight, enjoyment, or glee. It's a hollow, cruel, vicious little bastard. A word for something sought with an hilarious couple of wobbly antennae on your head and the words, I want it, on your shirt. And it tends to leave you waking up with your face stuck to the street. Somehow, Angua had acquired a magenta feather boa. It wasn't her, it wasn't anyone. It had just turned up. The sheer fakery of it made her more gloomy. Something was nagging at the back of her mind, and it annoyed her that she didn't know what it was. They had ended up in Beers, as she knew they would. It was the undead bar, although it tolerated anyone who wasn't too normal. It certainly tolerated Tawnee. She just didn't get it, did she? The reason why men never talked to her. The trouble was, thought Angua, that Nobby wasn't actually a bad person as such. As far as she knew, he'd always been faithful to Miss Pushpram, which was to say that when it came to being hit with a fish and then pelted with clams, he never thought of any other girl but her. He actually had quite a romantic soul, but it was encased in what could only be called Nobby Nobs. Sally had accompanied Tawnee to the ladies, which always came as a shock to people who hadn't seen it before. Now Angua was staring at yet another cocktail menu, painted on a board above the bar, in a very shaky script by Igor, who wasn't an Igor, but was merely called one. It was best not to have fun with him on this subject, and especially not to ask him to sew your head back on. He'd done his best to flow with the zeitgeist, or would have done if he'd known what the word meant, but had totally failed to grasp the subtleties of the modern cocktail bar, so that the drinks on offer included having your teeth smashed in by a big stinky fist, head nailed to the door, kick in a fork, like big lump of steel hammer through your ears, neck bolt. Actually, the neck bolt wasn't too bad, Angua had to admit.
"Excuse me," said Cherry, teetering on a barstool. "But what was all that about Tawnee? I could see you and Sally nodding to each other."
"That, oh, it's the jerk syndrome." Angua remembered who she was talking to and added,
Dwarfs probably don't have that. It means sometimes a woman is so beautiful that any man with half a brain isn't going to think of asking her out, okay? Because it's obvious that she's far too grand for the likes of him. Are you with me?
I think so.
Well, that's Tawnee. And for the purposes of this explanation, Nobby has not got half a brain. He's so used to women saying no when he asks them out that he's not afraid of being blown out. So he asks her, because he figures why not. And she, who by now thinks there's something wrong with her, is so grateful she says okay.
But she likes him.
I know. That's where it all gets strange.
It's much simpler for dwarfs, said Cheery.
I expect it is.
But probably not as much fun, said Cheery, looking crestfallen.
Tawnee was returning. Angua ordered 3 neck bolts while Cheery hopefully negotiated for a screaming orgasm. Patience is a key virtue among dwarfs. And then, with occasional assistance from Sally, Angua explained to Tawnee the facts of, well, everything. It took some while. You had to keep changing the shape of sentences to get them to fit into the currently available space in Tawnee's brain. Angua clung to the idea, though, that the girl couldn't be that stupid. She worked in a strip club, didn't she?
I mean, why do you think men pay to watch you on stage? She asked.
"'Because I'm very good,' said Tawny promptly. "'When I was 10, I got the Dancer of the Year Award in Miss Deviante's ballet and tap class.'
"'Tap dancing,' said Sally, grinning. "'Hey, why don't you try that on stage?'
Angua closed her mind to the image of Tawny tap dancing. The club would probably burn to the ground.
"'Let me try this another way,' she said. "'And I'm telling you this as another female.'
Tawny listened intently, and even the way in which she looked puzzled was unfair to the rest of her sex. When Angua had finished, she looked hopefully at the angelic expression.
"'So, what you're saying, right,' said Tawny, "'is that walking out with Nobby is like going into a big posh restaurant "'and only eating the bread roll.'
"'Exactly,' said Angua.
"'You got it. "'But I never really meet men. "'Granny told me not to act like a floozy.'
"'And you don't think that working at a—'
Angua began, but Sally cut in.
"'Sometimes you need to floose regularly.' She said, "'Haven't you ever just gone into a bar and had a drink with a man?'
"'No.'
"'Right,' said Sally. She drained her glass. "'I don't like these neck bolts. Let's go somewhere else and open your mind to possibilities.'
It was odd, having Sybil in Pseudopolis Yard. It had been one of the Ramkin family houses before she'd given it to the watch. She'd been a girl there. It had been her home. Some apprehension of this crept into the chipped and stained souls of the watchmen. Men, not known for the elegance of their manners, found themselves automatically wiping their feet as they came in, and respectfully removing their helmets. They spoke differently, too, slowly and hesitantly, anxiously scanning the sentence ahead for expletives to delete. Someone even found a broom and swept up, or at least moved the dirt to a less obvious place. Upstairs, in what had been until then the cash office, young Sam slept peacefully in a makeshift bed. One day, Vimes hoped, he would be able to tell him that on one special night he'd been guarded by 4 troll watchmen. They'd been off duty, but volunteered to come in for this, and were just itching for some dwarfs to try anything. Sam hoped the boy would be impressed. The most other kids could hope for was angels. Vimes had commandeered the canteen because it had a big enough table. He'd spread out a map of the city. A lot of the rest of the planking was occupied by pages from the Coombe Valley Codex. This wasn't a game, this was a puzzle. A sort of, yes, jigsaw puzzle. And he ought to be able to do it, he reasoned, because he already had nearly all the corners. Ettercap Street, Money Trap Lane, Crybaby Alley, Scuttlebutt Court, the Jeebies, Pellicle Steps, he said. Tunnels everywhere. They were lucky to find it after only 3 or 4. Mr. Rascal must have had lodgings in half the streets in the area, including Empirical Crescent.
"'But why?' said Sir Reynold, stitched. "'I mean, why dig tunnels everywhere?'
"'Tell him, Carrot,' said Vimes, drawing a line across the city. Carrot cleared his throat. "'Because they were dwarfs, sir, and deep downers at that,' he said. "'It wouldn't occur to them not to dig, and mostly it'd just be a matter of clearing out buried rooms in any case. That's a stroll to a dwarf.' "'And they were laying rails, so they could take the spoil out anywhere they wanted.'
"'Yes, but surely,' Sir Reynold began.
"'They were listening out for something talking at the bottom of an old well,' said Vimes, still bending over the map. "'What chance that it would still be visible? "'And people can get a bit iffy when a bunch of dwarfs turn up and start digging holes in a garden.'
"'It'll be very slow, surely.'
"'Well, yes, sir, but it would be in the dark, under their control and secret,' said Carrot. "'They could go anywhere they wanted.' They could zigzag around if they weren't certain. They could home in with their listening tube, and they'd never have to speak to a human or see daylight. Dark, controllable, and secret.
Deep downers, in a nutshell, said Vimes.
This is very exciting, said Sir Reynold. And they dug into my museum.
Over to you, Fred, said Vimes, carefully drawing another line across the map.
Right, said Fred Colon. Nobby and me found out where only a couple of hours ago, he said, thinking it wisest not to add, after Mr. Vimes yelled at us and made us tell him every last detail, and then sent us back and told us what to look for. What he did add was, they were pretty clever, sir. The mortar even looked dirty. I bet you're saying to yourself, aha, sir.
I am, said Sir Reynold, bewildered. I would normally say, my goodness.
I expect you're saying to yourself, aha, how were they able to build up the wall again after they'd got the Muriel out, sir, and we reckon.
"'Well, I imagine one dwarf stayed behind to make good, lay low, as you would say, and wandered out in the morning,' said Sir Reynold. "'There were people going in and out all the time. We were looking for a big painting, after all, not a person.'
"'Yes, sir. We reckon one dwarf stayed behind to make good, lay low, and wandered out in the morning. There were people going in and out all the time. You were looking for a big painting, after all, not a person,' said Fred Colon. He'd been very pleased to come up with that theory, so he was going to say it out loud, no matter what.
Vimes tapped the map. "'And here, Sir Reynold, is where a troll called Brick fell through a cellar floor into their tunnel,' he said. "'He also told us he saw something in the main mine which sounds very much like the rascal.
"'But, alas, you have not found it,' said Sir Reynold.
"'I'm sorry, sir. It's probably long gone out of the city.'
"'But why?' said the curator. "'They could have studied it in the museum. We're very interactive these days.'
"'Interactive,' said Vimes. "'What do you mean?'
"'Well, people can look at the pictures as much as they want,' said Sir Reynold.
He sounded a little annoyed. People shouldn't ask that kind of question.
"'And the pictures do what, exactly?'
"'Hang there, Commander,' said Sir Reynold.
"'Of course.'
"'So what you mean is, people can come and look at the pictures, and the pictures, for their part, are looked at.'
"'Rather like that, yes,' said the curator.
He thought, for a moment, aware that this probably wasn't sufficient, and added,
"'But dynamically-er.'
"'You mean the people are moved by the pictures, sir?' said Carrot.
"'Yes,' said Sir Reynold, with huge relief. "'Well done. That's just what happens.' "'And we've had the rascal on public display for years. "'We even had a stepladder in case people want to examine the mine-tins. "'Sometimes people come in with a bee in their bonnet "'that one of the warriors is pointing to some barely visible cave or something. "'Frankly, if there was some secret, I would have found it by now. "'There was no point to the theft, unless someone had found the secret "'and didn't want anyone else to find it.' said Vimes.
"'That would be rather a coincidence, wouldn't it, Commander? It's not as if anything has changed just recently. Mr. Rascal didn't turn up and paint another mountain, and although I hate to say this, just destroying the painting would have been enough.